During our fall book show recently, we heard from many of you about wonderful local authors whose novels are on your reading lists. One Vermont writer who was recommended by a few listeners is Tim Weed. Weed's new novel is a perfect fit for the Thanksgiving season. It's called Will Poole's Island. It's historical fiction set in the colonial era, and it tells the story of an English boy who becomes immersed in a native community. VPR's Peter Biello talked with Weed about the inspiration behind the story and about the author's interest in bringing accuracy to our understanding of how English and native cultures collided.
So Will Poole is an English teenager from a wealthy family, and his parents have died, and he's under the care of a guardian whom he despises. And in your novel, he feels oppressed by the strict Puritan society. How would you describe Will Poole's life at the beginning of the novel?
Well, I think you're right. He's in many ways, he's what we would consider to be a typical teenager, in that he feels claustrophobic. He feels the need to get out and get away. But on top of that is the fact that he's existing in a historical period when oppression or repression he feels in his community is particularly acute. One of the things that was interesting in my research for the book was accounts of young English men and women who were kidnapped by different indigenous groups. And when it came time to be ransomed or rescued, they were often reluctant to return to these English communities because they found a sort of freedom and ease in the indigenous communities that they didn't find in English society.
They were less oppressive than the Puritan society.
Yeah, a lot freer, the ability to be yourself a little bit more.
And while he's out with Squamiset, he learns a variety of hunting and survival techniques, as well as some, I guess you would call them, mystical skills. Could you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah. One of the things, another thing that was fascinating to me in my research was this idea that both the English and the Indian societies at the time were very much, their worldviews included a lot of what I would call the visionary and the unseen. And so in terms of researching the book, I did a lot of research on shamanism in particular. And so Squamiset is a shaman, or what the Wampanoags or the Native Americans at that time would have called a powwow. And so Will, it turns out, has a proclivity for these things, and so that's one of the skills that he learns from Squamiset.
What inspired you to write this story?
Well, you know, it started out, I was doing a lot of family research. I was tracing my English ancestors back to the 1630s, and I started to learn about some very interesting stories. There was the story of Thomas Trowbridge, who came over to New Haven, Connecticut, and became one of the founders of New Haven, Connecticut, with three young boys. And Thomas Trowbridge went back to England to fight for Oliver Cromwell in the English Civil War, and was promptly killed in battle, leaving his three sons as orphans in the care of a servant who turned out to be corrupt and basically swindled these boys out of their fortunes. And so that was a very provocative story for me. But at the same time, I have Native American ancestors, and that's a side that hasn't been well represented. There were no firsthand account of Native Americans before the 19th century. And so in a way, the motivation for the book was to sort of immerse myself in this period and to find out more about it, and if I could, to find out what I consider to be the truth about the period.
And in addition to your family connections giving some basis for this fictional account in reality, you also mentioned in your author's note that Squamiset was based on a real person.
Yes. In 1614, so this was 6 years before Plymouth Rock, an English sea captain named Thomas Hunt kidnapped 27 Algonquian-speaking Indians from different spots along the New England coast and brought them back to Malaga, Spain, and sold them into slavery. One of this group was a Patuxet Wampanoag Indian who called himself Tisquantum, which was a name that was later shortened to Squanto. And Tisquantum had a very interesting story. He managed to escape slavery in Spain. He made his way up to England, and he spent 5 years in London living in the household of an English nobleman who had interest in colonizing the New World. And so he became fluent in English and made his way back to the New World. And when he came back to the New World, he was, you know, became one of the interpreters for the Wampanoags, or the Pilgrims, encountered when they landed at Plymouth Rock. So it's a very interesting story, and Squamiset is in a way based on this true story of Tisquantum.
The story is about, in my view, someone trying to just live more fully. You know, Will Poole feeling like there's got to be more to life than the walls of this settlement. The novel involves Will Poole's eventual search for safe haven from the colony, which he has renounced so that he can live with and learn from Squamiset. So the book seems to alternate between action scenes running from the English who are chasing him and contemplative scenes in which Will is reflecting on his place in his new society, his abilities, his relationship with the Indians. So how did you strike that balance between this sort of action and contemplative life?
Well, I think that's an interesting observation, and to me, that is something that literature can do in a way that no other medium can, including film, maybe even especially film, that this idea that literature exists on the knife edge between experience and consciousness. So I think that that's the balance any novelist needs to strike, because I think that that's the sort of comparative advantage of literature, is the ability to get inside someone's mind and allow the reader to experience life, you know, from the inside of a character as well as from the exterior.
So you mentioned it a few times, the fact that these characters who refuse to go back to the society they were born in, do you feel a certain kinship? Is that something you feel, that the rules surrounding you in this society are perhaps too tight?
Well, that's interesting. I don't know if I feel that way now. I do feel that I felt that way as a teenager. And I think that a lot of teenagers feel the same way. Maybe they don't articulate it that way.
Parental rules.
Parental rules and this sense of restriction, and you have to break out. I mean, I have two teenage children, so it's familiar. I mean, a lot of the feedback I've got on the book, I mean, I've gotten some great feedback, but some of the best has been from kids of that age, you know, teenagers who really seem to resonate with it. And also this idea of getting outside, that's some of the best thing I've heard. It's like, this book really made me want to be outside.
One of the persistent themes here in this book is that people can only see what they want to see, or they see what they fear, and that the conjurers like Squamiset are able to provide these illusions, evoke these images that can sort of paralyze people. Is that something you encountered in your research?
Yes. I mean, I think that some of that was in my research and some of that has been in my experience. That is a sort of an element of shamanism. But also, you know, as one of the things that I do, I mentioned that I get out into the wilderness a lot. One of the things I do is fly fish. And as a fly fisherman, you're trying to create the illusion of an insect that a trout would be feeding on. But the trout really constructs that image. You just give them a couple fibers that sort of glint a certain way on the water, and the trout constructs this image of this insect. So, and I think that we as humans do that too. I know that I have. Sometimes you just see what you really want to see or what you really fear to see.
And at one point in this book, that materializes as Squamiset sort of transforming himself into a satanic figure and scaring everybody off. But I guess he's just, you know, the equivalent of putting out a very realistic looking piece of bait.
Well, there's another part to that, and that is that, you know, if you read about English society at the time, you know, they were very rooted in the visionary and the unseen too. There were sailors that were seeing mermaids and sea serpents coiled on a rock outside of Cape Ann, you know, so that it was a part of daily life. They actually believed, the Puritans believed, that the devil was at large in the forest, and they feared it greatly. And so, it really, you know, for them to see a devil was, I think of it as something that wasn't too hard for Squamiset to do. Because they were ready for it.
In ways that we aren't now, it seems.
That's right. That's right.
The book details some pretty graphic scenes of violence and punishment. You paint the English colonists as the evil people here. I mean, why do you think the colonists were a clear antagonist from Will's perspective?
You know, the English, and I have to say this as someone who's descended largely from Englishmen, they came to America because they wanted purity. They wanted to escape what they saw as the religious pollution that they were experiencing in Europe. And so when they got to New England, they saw these Indians as devil worshipers. They were, you know, it was a way that these Indians had a form of religion that was impure. And so the reaction, it was very extreme. In 1637, there was the incident of the Pequot Massacre, where you know, a group of Englishmen and Indian allies surrounded a walled village and burned it to the ground, killing 600 to 700 people and selling the survivors into slavery. And so this was a reflection of the period, that this combination of thinking that Indians were devil worshippers, and also, you know, coincidentally, that the English needed more land because they had a lot of people coming in who were looking for land, led to some real antagonism between the forces. So I feel like that the book, in a way, is sort of just reflecting the reality.
What do you think of Thanksgiving as a holiday? The pop culture image of the holiday makes us think that there was at least one day of harmony. Does that ring true to you, given all you've researched?
Well, you know, it's what I would call the Thanksgiving myth. And, you know, in 1621, there was indeed a meal between the Wampanoags and the Pilgrims or Puritans. But it's what I call the Thanksgiving myth. And I think it does ring true as far as it goes, but it doesn't go far enough. I think that it's a much more complicated and interesting story because most Americans, if you ask them, they'll say, well, there's Thanksgiving, you know, we learned to plant corn, we had this meal, the Pilgrims survived, jump cut to 1776. And there's 150 years in there, and there's a lot that happened. I mean, there's these virgin soil epidemics that swept through New England between 1616 and 1619 and wiped out 95% of the population. There were, you know, several wars between the English and the Indians. There's a lot of very interesting history, and I think we need to be more honest with ourselves about our deepest national origins, because I think in the process of retelling ourselves these stories and sort of redefining the Thanksgiving myth and making it more real and more complicated, we're making ourselves better people. We're making ourselves better Americans, and we can go forward in a way that is more is more realistic, and it's, you know, can lead to greater healing. So I love Thanksgiving as a holiday, and I don't want to get rid of it or anything like that. I just think it's an opportunity for us to become more acquainted with 17th century history as it really was.
Your book certainly does that. So, Tim, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Peter, it's been a great pleasure.
That's Vermont writer Tim Weed talking with VPR's Peter Biello. Weed's new novel is called Will Poole's Island.